Hi, thanks for tuning in. I'm Paul Zimmy Finn. This is The Generation Report. When the events happening today are finally written down in history books, what will those books say? Obviously, no one can predict with 100% certainty. But whatever happens over the next 100 days or over the next 10 years, we can be certain of one thing. There is no way any of the retellings will leave room for middle ground. In this summer of 2024, it's clear that America has reached a tipping point when it comes to middle ground. On virtually every important front, the notion of middle ground has become an anachronism. Back in November of 2022, I said on this podcast that our country has become divided not simply by different political allegiances and cultures and lifestyles, but by entirely different conceptions of reality. Various other times, I've alluded that where Americans sort themselves in these divides seems to correspond with how their views align with those of the elites who define America's ruling establishment. Never have these assertions been borne out more than they have been over the period since June 27th. And in that span, Neil Howe has appeared on several podcasts to talk about the state of things. To Howe's credit, in the 10 years I have been applying his ideas and following his insights, I have never heard him give an assessment of the state of America as direct as he has in these recent appearances. Yet at the same time, when discussing the divide in the country, Howe continues to focus on being analytical about the present through the lens of generational theory without pivoting to a genuinely open-ended conversation about how we got here. Whether Howe realizes it or not, this keeps the conversation in a kind of hamster wheel of circular logic. Everything is happening because we're living in a fourth turning. Once it's established that we are in a fourth turning, it's crucial to consider the influences that shape today's distinct divide. And I've never been more convinced that at the center of America's divide today lie beliefs that have been moving American society toward two separate reality camps for a long time. I'll mention what I think those beliefs are in just a minute. But first, when I spoke about political correctness back in May, I made the points that America's establishment elites overwhelmingly fit the criteria for politically correct and that they seem to perceive reality itself through the lens of political correctness. I also made the point, albeit indirectly, that political correctness by its very nature presumes that all old social arrangements were essentially prejudiced and that ordinary people's beliefs are inherently uninformed and in need of reshaping and reconditioning. However, our elites became politically correct as a group, and that's a whole conversation unto itself. The way political correctness appears to be our elite's singular hallmark is about as clear an indication as there can be that today's divergent reality perceptions reflect, to a great extent, a difference in class sensibilities. And many voices across the spectrum have observed that class sensibilities are a major influence, from Tucker Carlson to Victor Davis Hanson to David Brooks to most recently Barry Weiss. Even a brief examination of what America's elites have been saying and doing over the last two or three decades would show they have largely removed themselves from the mundane and often tragic aspects of life outside their politically correct bubble. Therefore, it should come as no surprise that our elites and the people who align with them have refashioned America in their minds as a place where ideals, which is to say, rhetoric, and good people, people like themselves, inevitably prevail. There seems little doubt that the conception of America, which has been embraced by our elites, draws from the same ideas that produced their particular version of American history and their particular view of reality. It goes without saying that listing off all these beliefs would take all day. But if that list could be narrowed down to just a few core beliefs, I contend they would be these four. Number one. The belief that the right amount of social improvement and rational and spiritual enlightenment can fundamentally change the way we live. Number two, antipathy toward traditional values and the people who profess to have them in the belief that they are unenlightened and obstacles to progress. Number three, a deep-seated aversion to acknowledging the tragic aspects of life, of history, and of human nature. Number four, a loss of appreciation for the difference between America's stated ideals and the country itself. For me, that last belief, the loss of the appreciation for the difference between America's stated ideals and the country itself, is the most important driving factor behind the national crisis through which we are living. Every decision, every policy, every statement, and every speech that invokes America as an idea, making America live up to its ideals, or protecting democracy treads an extraordinarily delicate balance. between recognizing the limits of rhetoric to achieve a desired result and conflating rhetoric with reality. Once rhetoric is conflated with reality, the story of America can be contoured any which way to satisfy the self-concept of the people who craft the narrative, and all manner of distortion, denunciation, and force can be brought to bear against the people who stand in the way of their objectives. The next time you come across a cable news pundit or a presidential historian or Ken Burns sermonizing about America in a language heavily reliant on wonky deconstruction or a form of pseudo-spiritualism that seems sophisticated but really isn't, it's important to keep two things in mind. First, America was not always talked about this way. In fact, reality was not always talked about this way. And second, they are not doing it by accident. This is the language of political correctness, and the power of the politically correct rendition of America is that it places ideals, and carefully selected ones at that, above tangible reality. To the politically correct, their curated reality is superior to actual reality. Hence, their number one objective, now and always, is controlling the narrative. Having transformed American history into a melodramatic struggle between the forces of light and the forces of darkness, our elites have turned the present into the same. And you can be sure the people who see themselves as the forces of light will keep saying anything they think they need to say in order to keep the narrative on their side. Pivoting to a consideration of everything that's happening in our country right now, this is where I maintain that Neil Howe has not stepped outside his generational theory lens to see what really appears to be shaping the way this national crisis has unfolded. In the course of his conversation with Patrick Bet David, Howe was asked about what has happened to America in terms of values and principles, specifically as it relates to the culture and the causes and the expressions which now have the full backing of the establishment. Howe answered by saying, in effect, that no matter how socially chaotic fourth turnings become, societies always go back to the conventional when the sense of civic peril overtakes everyday life. Those who have read The Fourth Turning Is Here know that Howe devotes a lot of space in the new book stressing the developments that always come about in fourth turnings, and this point about conventionality is one he places a particular emphasis on. But at some point when I was thinking about that notion of going back to the conventional, I realized, what is conventional? Is the standard for what constitutes convention something that everyone agrees upon and which never ever changes? Or can that standard be changed, either by ideas that attack the notion of conventional itself, or by people who insist on making the way they live and the way they see the world the new conventional? I don't think anyone would dispute that what is considered conventional can change, and that moreover, for a significant portion of the American population, it has. Whatever cause you want to cite as the culprit, identity politics, secularism, careerism, the four beliefs I mentioned earlier, it's clear that many Americans today have no attachment to the sense of conventional that previous generations of ordinary Americans did. Of course, many, if not most, Americans do remain attached to old conventional aspirations, meaning their sense of what it means to be American cannot be brought in line with the new culture and its associated mindset. Angelo Codevilla summed up the divide this way in an essay called Our Revolution's Logic back in 2018. Ordinary Americans are alienated now in ways unimaginable to the Northerners and Southerners who killed each other a century and a half ago, but who nodded when Abraham Lincoln noted that they prayed to the same God. Both revered the American founding. Both aspired to the same family life. They were one people. Now we are no longer one people. Today, more than at any point in this fourth turning, it's clear that at the heart of the crisis engulfing America is a fundamental disagreement over what constitutes reality itself. And pivoting back to what I said in the very beginning, it's clear that one of the results from this will be that 10, 15, 20 years from now, all of the history written and produced about today will be crafted around a version of events that has no connection whatsoever to the other version of events. No one can yet say precisely which side will have the upper hand, but at this point, I believe it's much more likely than not that most of that history will toe the line for the pro-establishment, politically correct point of view. In these retellings, one of today's sides will be democratic, one side will be undemocratic. Certain leaders will be noble, selfless, honest, and heroic. Other leaders will be ignoble, selfish, dishonest, and despotic. Certain political protests will be for the right causes and masked by well-intentioned people, other political protests will be for the wrong causes and masked by bad people. Certain political results will be legitimate, other political results will be wholly illegitimate. Certain events and certain quotes will demand the powerful be held to account. Other events and other quotes will be conspicuously minimized and memory-holed. Certain perspectives will be right, other perspectives won't be wrong, so much as they will be impermissible. Nothing about all this will carry even the pretense of free and open inquiry. To the politically correct who craft the history of today, everything will be measured by whether or not, in their estimation, America lived up to its stated ideals, no matter what actually happens to the country itself. If you want to read someone who makes the case for why the other, non-politically correct reality will triumph in this battle for the narrative and for history, it's hard to find a better voice than Matthias Desmet, author of the great book The Psychology of Totalitarianism. Desmet recently published a terrific essay on his Substack. I've included a link to it in the description. But wherever this battle of parallel realities ultimately leads, it must spur a reevaluation of many aspects of the Strauss-Howe generational theory framework. That is not because the theory's fundamentals and its generational insights do not still hold up to scrutiny. In both cases, they still do. It is because, dating back to 1991, whenever predictions and analyses of various possibilities for this era were offered by Strauss or by Howe, they never considered the possibility that we would be facing this. Neil Howe is finally conceding that America appears to be on the verge of civil conflict. At this point, I mostly hope we're not headed for something that could be a good deal worse. Orwell famously wrote, "Who controls the past controls the future." We would be wise not to forget those words. Thank you for listening. May God bless America.